I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Chris Hearn. He is the president and CEO of Community Bank Shares, which is the holding company for Community Bank and Trust, Phoenix Lender Services, and Thomas Financial Group. They finance the nation's small and underserved businesses through SBA 7A, USDA B&I, and other government-guaranteed loan programs. Their target, they finance projects from startups to over $100 million, with most being business acquisitions, owner-occupied, operated commercial real estate, working capital, business debt, refinance and consolidation, equipment, franchises, partner buyouts, and so forth. And so, you know, right now we're at a time where interest rates are a little bit higher. Chris and I were talking about that in the green room. And I think it's a question that businesses are facing where, you know, when do I finance? How much should I finance? And so I think this will be a really interesting discussion. Chris, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Craig.
Yeah. So now you said something about growing up with a single mom and she was a business person.
That's right. Yep. Yep. She was a chocolatier of all things. And she started when I was about 7. And it was my younger brother and her and I, you know, making chocolate in the kitchen and in the basement for many, many years, actually. You know, going up and down the stairs, putting the chocolate molds in the freezer because you can't add more chocolate unless, you know, if you've colored the chocolate. It's a whole complex assembly line type thing. But of course, I hated it back then, but I learned all about marketing. I learned about, you know, manufacturing, you know, operations. I even learned a little bit about accounting and finance. It was an interesting thing that the older I get, I look back on it fondly and, you know, think, wow, that was very helpful to my career now, because what I do now is I finance entrepreneurs every day, and my team and I are very passionate about doing it. And I could probably trace it back to those early days, along with my mother was also a real estate agent at one point. And I distinctly remember I was about 13 helping her actually pass, you know, study for the exam or the, whatever it was, the test, and help her pass that. And that probably planted something in my head about, you know, finance in general, which is what I ultimately end up doing.
Yeah. You know, as you were talking about that, you know, I think, could she do that today? Is it possible today to make chocolate in your personal kitchen and then sell it right to the public? Is that allowed?
Probably not. I'm pretty sure she violated a whole bunch of health codes at the time, but, you know, she was a resourceful entrepreneur. And, you know, to this day, I'm sure there's statute of limitations. I'm not sure she paid much in taxes back then, Craig, but she had quite a following. She developed quite a following. You know, people enjoyed her story. They loved her different chocolates that she did. You know, she did some things that were a little bit outside the box compared to other folks back then. And just, you know, and even to this day, she just turned 75. And she still hears from people that, you know, were customers 40 some years ago or 45 years ago, for instance. I don't know that you could do it quite today. She'd probably have to do one of those, you know, one of those kitchens, you know, where a bunch of different restaurants are at. I can't remember what that's called.
Ghost kitchen.
Yeah. So she'd probably have to do something like that. But yeah, it was interesting for sure. Yeah. And actually, I didn't even like chocolate for a while there because I think I got burned out on it. So I do now, of course.
You know, and this is a little divergent from finance, but, you know, it's interesting. You know, things that people could get away with years ago. I remember Rachel Maddow had a little TV commercial where she's on the Hoover Dam saying, you know, we built this in, I forgot what the time frame she was talking about, when engineering marvel. And she's like, we should be able to do this today. I'm like, well, not with today's OSHA regulations. You know how many people died building that dam?
That's right. It's oftentimes you think about it. I mean, I've said the same thing. I don't say a lot of things similarly with Rachel Maddow, but sometimes, I don't feel like we take enough moonshots as a society anymore. And part of the reason is because we are overly protective. We have a lot of regulations that prevent us from taking some of those risks for the sought after returns. Same thing applies to any entrepreneur starting a business, quite frankly. Now, they may not be taking a moonshot necessarily, but I think there's something to this. We haven't been back to the moon in what, 50 years, something like that.
Well, we're just going for Mars. We're skipping the moon, just going to
Yeah,
Mars.
yeah, yeah. Oh, I know, I know. But you know what I mean? I mean, I think in some ways she's right. They built Hoover Dam in the mid-30s, and I kind of think it was done in like 3 years or something like that. Panama Canal is another example. A lot of people died, unfortunately, building that. But what a marvel that we were able to do that. We had that vision to do something so expansive that I'm sure there was tons of naysayers at the time. But that's, frankly, Craig, that's what fuels my passion for helping entrepreneurs, because some of the businesses that I've financed, they're little acorns, but they grow up to be gigantic oak trees, and they're doing amazing stuff. And the breakthroughs in society come from entrepreneurs. They don't come from politicians. They don't come from media. They don't come from bureaucrats. They don't come from professors. They come from entrepreneurs. So that's what's really exciting about what I've done for the last almost 30 years.
Well, and here's another example. You were talking about your mom starting her business in her kitchen. There's a company you've probably heard of them. They're called Hewlett Packard.
The garage.
Their first product was a frequency counter for Disney. Or a frequency generator for Disney. And they built, this was during the Great Depression. They launched, both Disney and Hewlett Packard launched during the Great Depression.
That's right.
And they painted the frequency generator and then they put it in their mom's oven to bake the paint.
And they're working out of their garage, which a lot of famous Silicon Valley stuff starts there. But yeah, I mean, again, that's a great example of being resourceful and adaptable and, not letting a typical obstacle stand in the way.
So I guess this is part of the question that every entrepreneur has to answer is, okay, you start young and scrappy, you do crazy things like that, and then at some point you have to grow up, and then you have to start fueling the growth of the business, and that's kind of where you come in. And I'll just be honest, debt scares the crap out of me. It just terrifies me.
Well, it scares the crap out of a lot of people. I mean, entrepreneurialism is not for everyone. I mean, I've probably talked more people out of becoming entrepreneurs than I should, just because not everybody has the stomach for it. I mean, like I said, the thing that moves society forward are the entrepreneurs that take the risks when everybody else tells them they're crazy, and they're seeking their returns for those risks. They don't always succeed, of course. Plenty of entrepreneurs have failures along the way. But it's not for everybody. I would say, if I had to guess, maybe 25%, 30% of the population has the stomach for doing this. So, but I mean, let me turn it on you. I mean, surely this podcast made you nervous when you started it, right? You didn't know how this was going to go, and yet you did it.
Well, yeah, this wasn't such a big deal. When I met my wife, I was starting my business and we went out on a couple dates and it looked like it was going somewhere. And I sat down with her and I said, "Hey, I need to tell you, here's, because we were both in our 40s at that point. She had been married to a divisional president of U.S. Food Services." And I'm sitting there thinking, she probably had a different vision for this phase of her life than what I have to offer. And I told her, I said, "Let me tell you what's going on. I'm starting a business. I just want to be clear, the most likely outcome is it's going to fail. And if it doesn't fail, the next most likely outcome will be a modest but livable income." And I said, "Let's not talk fantastic wealth. That's just such a small probability. But this is the path I'm on. And it may not be the path you want, which is fine, but you have to answer that question." She actually found it endearing because a lot of guys were telling her how they were going to provide the world to her. And I'm like, "No, I'm going to give you a life of poverty. Are you in?" And but it was
You sort of set the expectations low so you can over deliver, I guess.
But it was what you're talking about. I'm looking at it, and it's like, I think like a lot of entrepreneurs, I saw some things that I felt like were broken in the world. I felt like I could fix them, but it's very high risk. And honestly, it's been really hard.
Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
there have been abundant times, there have been slim times. But one of the questions I wrestle with, it comes back to debt. And that's where, for me, I'm okay taking the risk starting a business. When it comes to getting debt to run the business, that's where it scares me.
Okay, well.
And I would imagine I'm not alone. How do you process through, getting the debt? Now, having that nice pile of money to fuel growth looks great, but if you use it and the growth doesn't come, now you're on the hook, and often you have your house as collateral or something like that. How should businesses look at debt?
Well, I think unless you're starting a business where it's a proven concept, like a franchise, for instance, I finance a lot of startups in the franchise space, but this franchise is sort of turnkey, right? If you follow the directions, so to speak, from the franchisor, you should have similar output. You should have similar economic results, right? But non-franchise startups, I think to be successful in business, of course, you have to have a tolerance for risk. Like you just said, there's going to be days where it's great and there's going to be days where it's awful. I mean, that's one thing. The entrepreneurial journey is literally a roller coaster always. So you have to kind of know that going into it. But I think the most successful entrepreneurs starting out have picked a niche, something that they can hopefully be, a world beater in. And they've focused on that to try and dominate that niche. And it takes a, I would say in most cases, you've got to establish yourself. You've got to have proof of concept first before you take on debt. Not always, but that does help. Okay. And there is a transition for the business owner from a mindset perspective, I think, from going from an entrepreneur to becoming a CEO. Now, I would say that doesn't happen until you've done several million dollars in revenue and you've really gotten a lot more established. But, along that journey, at some point, if you believe in yourself enough, and let's face it, entrepreneurs are notoriously optimistic, maybe sometimes too optimistic, right? Although that does get them through some of the tough times, right? But, it's somewhat about betting on yourself. I mean, right now I'm the president and CEO of a bank holding company, which we own a bank, we own a lender service provider, we own a loan packager. We're one of the largest SBA lenders in the country. We are the largest USDA business lender in the country. But, I now have deposits to lend from where I didn't have it in my previous two companies in this space. I was the one that had, tens of millions of dollars of commercial warehouse lines to finance the loans that I was making. I couldn't rely upon deposits, which is what bankers do. And I personally guaranteed it. And, initially it's very terrifying, but you quickly get through that. Because if nothing else, in my case, years ago, I thought, well, gee, I've got my first $10 million line of credit. I don't have $10 million. I have to personally guarantee it. But you know what? They can come after me. It's not there and it is what it is. And you know what? If I fail, if it blows up, I'll just figure something out and I'll start over again with something else. And I think that sort of confidence that you have in yourself that you believe you're going to succeed, but if you don't, fortunately, we live in a country where, people believe in second chances and people can go and start over again. I'm not saying it's not difficult to do that, but I think it comes down to believing in yourself, believing in your business, feeling like you do solve a problem. I mean, that's what entrepreneurs are. They're problem solvers, and just moving it forward. But at some point in the journey, once you've proven the concept, and you're really ready to grow the business much more so than you could organically, that's when people consider taking on business debt to fuel that growth. And it's important. Some people do it too early. I will tell you, some people want too much. And as a lender, oftentimes we'll provide them feedback and say, well, we'll finance you for X dollars. We can't finance you for Y dollars that you asked for, because quite frankly, we need you to prove that you can pay us back, and that this is going to execute on your vision. We don't want you to bite off too much than you can chew. So we deal with that sometimes as well. And of course, I've seen some business plans in my time, Craig, that are just, off the charts, that just don't make any sense whatsoever. So, I think that is a balancing act. Entrepreneurs have to balance that eternal optimism with a little bit of pragmatism, and that doesn't always happen. And sometimes when somebody says they're going to grow 1,000% year one to year two, that's a huge red flag for us as a lender, because that's just not realistic.
Yeah. Is there a formula that helps guide how much debt I can take on to fuel the growth and, be able to, to make sure that I can still pay this out, that this is going to be good profitable growth for me rather than just growth for the sake of growth?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of different formulas. I can tell you, if I pull the curtain back on lending, business lending, commercial loans, one of the fundamental cores is cash flow. And I'll make it really simple for people. You'll hear your banker throw out, cash flow, debt service coverage ratios, DSCR, all these different things. And all it really means is does your business, does your operating company throw off enough cash to support all the obligations and any existing or projected debt on an annualized basis? And what I mean by that is, does your business throw off, in most cases, a pretty well-run baseline? Well, let me back up. SBA has a requirement. You have to basically throw off $1.15, $1.15 for every dollar of annualized debt for SBA to approve a lender lending you money. If that makes
Okay,
sense.
so let me, Does that mean, so let's say I'm going to borrow $1 million. Does that mean that I have to be generating what, 1.15?
No, because you're looking at gross revenue. So it comes down to, when I say cash available thrown off by the business, I mean, I'm talking net profit. I'm talking non-cash add backs like appreciation, or excuse me, depreciation, amortization, interest costs. You might have some extra surplus owner's comp that we can put into that calculation, different things like that. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, so yeah, it's net profit, it's not revenue.
It's basically EBITDA. Does your
Okay.
EBITDA show $1.15 for every dollar of annualized debt? Sorry, I've got some people doing construction outside.
Oh, I can't hear you, so we're
Oh,
good.
good. Good, good. All right.
All right, well, cool. Do you recommend that people go up to that 1.15, or what would you say is good practice?
Well, I mean, that's the minimum standard. A lot of conventional banks, they might have, it might be 1.4 times. This is a ratio, 1.4 to 1. If it's a particular risky business, you may see somebody even higher than that. But I think, a well-run business is going to be north of that. I mean, I have borrowers that are 2 times coverage, 3 times coverage. It's rare, but it does happen. But I think at that level, that means, you've priced your product or service well. You've got some decent profit margin, and you've got some room to grow. So, and it makes sense to take on business debt under those circumstances.
So let's talk a little bit about interest rates. So, the interest rates have been high, and if you've been in business for less than, 10, 15 years, this probably just feels like outrageous.
Yeah, I mean, I think what people have to understand is we're reverting to the norm in terms of interest rates. We had about 15 years post Great Recession where interest rates were absolutely ridiculously low. And unfortunately, people's perspective until very recently has been that that's the norm. And, we had that interest rate shock a couple of years ago where the prime rate, for instance, which almost doubled, well, actually more than doubled in about 15 months' time, that put a lot of stress on the system. Now, people have, things have normalized a little bit, prime's come down a little bit. But yeah, if people don't have a longer term perspective, if you're a business owner in your 30s, you're probably thinking this is a horrible time to be taking on any debt, when the reality is, it's it, this is we're probably still slightly below the average over the last, say, 50 years. So it's just it's interesting. Again, you don't hear about it as much maybe in the last 6 months or so. You hear it more on the consumer side, with home loans, for instance, things like that. But on the business side, 200-300 basis points probably shouldn't make a huge amount of difference in your business. If you're, if you've properly priced things and if you're in a growth mode, I think you're going to be fine. And, when I got into business, lending money to entrepreneurs back in the mid 90s, I can remember distinctly my very first approval letter I offered was at 12.5%, frankly. These days we're lending in the 8 and 9% range. So, pretty different world we're in.
What areas are you seeing growing? What sectors are you seeing the most growth?
I see a lot of growth these days with business acquisition lending, and that's predominantly because baby boomers own about 56% of all of America's small businesses, and they're reaching an inflection point where they want to sell the business, or they're going to have to shut it down, or they're going to have to gift it to their kids. And if they want to sell the business, then the kind of financing that I provide, predominantly SBA financing, is hands down the best option for them out there, unless someone wants to pay cash for the business, which, even if you have the cash, that doesn't make you a good steward of putting all the cash into purchasing a business necessarily. So yeah, I see a lot of that. I think we're going to have a massive amount of growth in that area over the next decade as baby boomers are retiring every day. I think I've seen a statistic that says like 9,000 baby boomers retire every day for the next roughly 10 years. So you're going to have a huge transfer of, ownership that's going to happen, huge transfer of wealth for that matter, as we know on the retirement side. But it's a huge opportunity for us. SBA has a cap on their 7(a) loans right now of $5 million. And quite frankly, that hasn't been indexed for inflation in about since 2010. So there's some bills in Congress now that would push that up to $10 million. Because believe it or not, there's plenty of small businesses, what I would consider small businesses, that are worth under $10 million, but worth more than 5 million. And you're going to see a lot of those transfer here over the coming decade. So it's a huge growth area for us. We do about 60% of our volume right now is financing business acquisitions like that across the board, all sorts of different industries.
Yeah, I gotta say, that's actually something that interests me is, it maybe as in addition to what I've got going on there, is finding one of these businesses that's been set up, and going in. Now, of course, buying a business is easy, figuring out how they ran it successfully is hard. But what categories of businesses, like what sectors, what verticals are you seeing the most activity?
I see a lot of business activity in e-commerce, of course. The
Mm-hmm.
problem as a lender, of course, is there's not much collateral oftentimes there, but hence why I use government guaranteed lending for these things. Very, very difficult to do business acquisition financing with a conventional ordinary bank for reasons like lack of collateral, for instance. I see a lot in the what I would say the contractor space, the trade space, plumbers, HVAC, electricians, things of that nature. There's a lot of business acquisitions that occur in the franchise space. From someone buying a new concept or buying multiple units of a concept, that happens a lot. I think those would be the ones that jump out at me. I mean, you always see the other things, professional services could be accounting firms, dentists, ophthalmologists, all sorts of different things like that. But, I'd like to see more manufacturing, of course, and obviously this administration is pushing that. That's a good thing for us in terms of bringing back jobs and the multiplier effect that the manufacturing businesses have across other industries. So those are the kinds of things that I'm seeing. Yeah.
How do you find these businesses? The baby boomers are retiring and the kids don't want to have the business and they're trying to
Right.
sell. How do you find these guys?
A lot of times it comes to us through business brokers, no different than how would you find a house? You'd go to the people that do this every day, which in the case of house hunting would be a realtor, right? So in our world, it's business brokers. We like to deal with people that are experts that do this for a living. I don't advise somebody just jumping on the internet and, Googling to see if there's any businesses for sale in your community. You could find one, but it's probably not a real efficient way to do so. It probably makes a lot more sense to go to somebody who does this for a living daily. And that's, in essence, it's very analogous to why you would. You could always buy a home directly, or a seller could have for sale by owner, but that doesn't always result in the best outcome compared to working with a realtor, for instance. So it's no different in my world.
Well, we're selling our house, and our realtor has had us doing things we would have never done on our own, and we get it. We can see it, and that's why you want to have a pro. I think my perception is, like, a lot of the trades, like the HVAC and plumbing, that they've gotten kind of pie-eyed because the private equity activity. Private equity's been overpaying for these businesses. And so everybody's thinking, I'd love to own an HVAC company right now, but I don't think anybody would sell one for a reasonable price because everything they're seeing going on with private equity.
Yeah, it has skewed the market a little bit, and I will say, as a conventional lender, we do have to get business valuations done to confirm the price of which the seller is selling their business, and it doesn't always work out. And sometimes we have to push it back to our buyer and say, sorry, this doesn't pencil out. You need to go and renegotiate with the seller because the economics of the business don't support the sale price that you want to do here, or the purchase price of our buyer. So it happens. I actually think we're on more on the tail end of the PE firms getting involved in some of the trades, because it's not as easy as those guys thought sometimes. The mindset has been, oh, you went to Wharton, got an MBA, you'll go do a roll up of, as many plumbers as you possibly can. But that doesn't mean that kid knows much about plumbing. Okay. And I'm not saying you have to, be in the field for decades to know about how to run a plumbing business, but you do have to get your hands dirty. You do have to roll up your sleeves. You do need to be able to, manage blue collar, for instance. It's very different than managing white collar, as you may know. So, there's aspects of this that can maximize your success or frustrate the hell out of you, frankly. So I'm not so sure that PE, I think they just have so much ammunition. They have so much dry powder that they've got to put it to work in different areas. I mean, you also see it in franchising. PE has really pushed into franchising over the last 20 years, because again, it's another place to deploy their capital. And at least in franchising, I would argue that it's repeatable success. It's basically it's a system that, like I said earlier, if you follow the instructions of the franchisor, you should have repeatable results and should get the similar results of what the franchisor expects and what other franchisees get in the system. So yeah, I think PE's, it's kind of like a, it's a creeping sea monster with tentacles all over the place. It's going to continue to push more and more into small business. I'm just not so convinced it's always going to be in the trades per se.
Yeah, there's in St. Louis, there's four HVAC companies that are owned by one PE firm. All the trucks have their own wraps. They're four different companies. They flood the zone with Google ads. You go off and you get three quotes, and they're all the same because they all came out of the same quoting computer. And what PE's done there is they've pushed the rates up so high that I think, sort of, for example, some numbers I saw recently, what was a $20,000 HVAC, the PE companies are selling for 40. And the PE companies have loaded the entities with debt, so they have to charge these rates. This is why I say I'd love to own an HVAC company, because you come in with, you run the company well, make good margins, do decent marketing, and you could totally cripple these guys because they can't, you don't compete on price, Don't
Right.
race to the bottom, but make a healthy profit. You can make a healthy profit and still be substantially cheaper than them. And
Yeah, you probably can. Although I would just say that's a dangerous, slippery slope, though. I think small businesses can compete with bigger companies on other variables other than price. I think it's really dangerous for a small business to try to compete on price. So, in a
well,
situation like
and that's why I'm
that.
trying to say it's not about race to the bottom. It's not
Right,
being,
exactly.
it's a, about what I'm talking about is go back 5 years or 6 years before the PE. Be at the set your pricing at what was the top of the market there, adjust it for
Right.
inflation, what have you.
Sure.
Yeah, still be, a healthy price, but the PE guys have to charge significantly more to service their debt. And I just don't think that that's sustainable. I think a well-run company that makes very, very good profits can come in lower than the PE guys while not competing on price. Have great service, have great marketing, and absolutely clean their clock.
Yeah, I think it happens. I just think also you got to remember the PE guys have much deeper pockets than that small business. And if they're really getting their butts kicked, I'm pretty sure the PE guys are going to try to throw out a ridiculous number to buy the business as well. Because sometimes that's what they do. Just if they've got a nuisance, sometimes it's easier for them to throw some money at it. And like I said, they got a lot more resources. So that I've seen that a few times as well.
Yeah.
But regardless, I do think. People freak out about like when Walmart enters a community. I'm sorry, Walmart doesn't do everything well,
Yeah.
and they're not always the cheapest. And they certainly don't provide the best service, and they can't niche down into certain sectors, or areas of a business. And so that's where I think small businesses, if they get past the headline freak out, they can compete well with larger companies, be it Walmart or others. It's just you've got to sort of, again, you got to believe in your business. You have got to find your right market, your right niche, and do what you can to try and dominate it. And I think I've seen a lot of examples of that where they've competed well against big companies. And those are the guys I like to finance, frankly.
Yeah. Well, Chris, this has been fascinating. And how do people reach you?
They can reach out to any of those companies. Phoenix Business is probably the best way. PHXbusiness.com, CommunityBankShares.com. Those are probably the best ways to get a hold of me. Look me up on LinkedIn. I used to have a lot of social media presence. I don't do that as much anymore. You can Google me. You'll find me in a lot of different media outlets. I do a lot of podcasts, do a lot of public speaking, a lot of press. So a lot of ways to reach out to me, follow me, and you can always just email me. My email's chern, so it looks like churn, at communitybankshares.com.
Chris, thanks for coming on Layers and Legacies.
Thanks for having me, Craig. Take care.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show. And it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.